Welcome to EAA Radio. I'm Wireless Mike. Today we are joined by Darren Robb and Sheila Hodgson from the International Test Pilot School. And we're standing in a beautiful Grumman Albatross. Welcome and thank you for joining us, Darren. How are you today?
Fantastic. How can you not be?
Exactly. I mean, we're out at AirVenture.
We got V12s. We got, like, you know, other flat four stuff, which if that's your thing, all
right. And so what can you tell me about the Grumman Albatross?
So ours is powered by two Curtiss-Wright 1820-76D engines. Produce about 1,425 horse apiece. Ours was built in 1953 for the U.S. Navy. When it was first built, it was based in Japan, came over to Newfoundland, went down to Bermuda, so she's literally been around the world. And the fact that we're able to keep it going.
Amazing.
Keep it airworthy. It's fantastic.
Right.
It's
now, this airplane, it's a little bit unique because you look on the outside and it looks very like a stock Albatross. But when you, right. you come inside, you guys have done some upgrades.
Yeah, so it's a one-off Albatross in the sense of we have a glass cockpit. We have two MyGoFlight heads-up displays in the pilot and co-pilot seat. We've currently just had installation of a head-mounted display for school purpose. Like, all this is for school use. We've installed an FTE, so flight test engineer lab, at our back table with six iPads connected to a level bomb, allowing students to see kind of the attitude, like the instrumentation of the aircraft without seeing the cockpit instrumentation. They're not hindered by if you could see it, there's small round like ship style door, so it's very hard to see the cockpit. You kind of have to look over shoulders and it's difficult for them to see what's going on.
So all those electronics allow the people in the back to learn how to be a test pilot engineer.
Yes. We also have an FTI rack with FTI instrumentation, which is flight test instruments. So we have load cells and string pots on the flight controls so that, I guess, sends the information to the rack, and they then can analyze that information and, yeah, help them become flight test engineers.
So where's the aircraft normally based at?
So we're based out of London, Ontario. We've had it since 2018. I've been with the company for 4 years, and I joke that if the Albatross leaves, I go with it. This is why I'm here, is for this aircraft. I want to work on old radials, want to work on warbirds.
Once you they got the airplane, how much work did they have to do to restore it, or was it in pretty good flying shape?
So when they bought it, it was kind of derelict in the desert in Arizona. They had to replace the left-hand wing, outboard wing section, because of damage. Changed the flight controls because they were all, you know, weather beat, tore up from the Arizona sun. Other than that, it was, I mean, we have an Albatross that's in fantastic shape as far as corrosion, and it's very clean.
The advantage of keeping it in the desert.
At that point, yeah.
Yes.
So now, unfortunately, well, let me rephrase that. Fortunately, we're in London, Ontario, where I can work on it, but it's, you know, more humidity, and so it's always something we're keeping an eye on.
And they've also replaced, like you said, all the avionics, and so you have an entire Garmin suite up there. Were you a part of that transition?
So that was avionics. That was our avionics technician, Josh, who did that. I was kind of project lead on it, but it was our avionics guys. Dual G3X, dual Garmin 530s, correct me if I'm wrong, G5. Yep. Looking at Josh's direct to make sure I have it right. Yeah, and then we have some of the original gauges, because some run off AC current.
Oh.
So the conversion is
harder.
We haven't done it yet. There's talk of it. Hopefully we keep some of the old gauges in, but we'll fight that fight when we get to it.
Right. But it's a very nice cockpit that has a very unique look from the having some of the old and some of the new.
Yeah, the pilots love it. And it keeps the aircraft current, keeps it relevant.
Right. And to fly in all conditions.
We're teaching test pilots, we're teaching flight test engineers. We need to keep it kind of up to date. And, you know, we just keep thinking of different things that we can put on the aircraft to make it more useful, more versatile.
And how much does the aircraft fly in a year, approximately?
So last year we were roughly 30-40 hours. I think this year will be more than that, the way it's going.
Is that dependent on the number of students you have running through the test pilot program?
Yeah, course load. They will fly it just to stay current on the airplane, you know, stay fresh. You know, they don't get rusty, kind of thing. And,
sure. All our pilots need to stay current.
Yeah. Yeah. They need to be used. They don't like sitting.
Right. And for the test pilot school, do you know how many other airplanes they have up there? Approximately.
We have around 25. So we're flying L-39s, L-29s. We recently got the approval for flight test on our Hawker Hunter. So, and that has, I mean, if you would think the Garmin's are our avionics, what they have in there is just absolutely incredible. What they want to do with that is amazing. I lose track of them. We have two Longies aircraft. One's what has variable stability. One is for like drone capabilities. I mean, I think they're the most expensive Longies in the world, to be honest, just with what they've done.
Right. And so for the flight test school, who's coming to the flight test school? Do you know?
I'm going to give that to Sheila.
Sheila.
We have students from all over the world. We have both military and civil students. So large aircraft OEMs, they send their students to us. We train them as test pilots and flight test engineers. We also have short courses, so sometimes people just send their students for like a 3-month course. We have online courses. So based on that, we've had about 25 different militaries around the world at our school, and they probably 5 or 6 different aircraft OEMs.
So you're reaching around people around the world who are coming to you for learning how to become test pilots.
Absolutely. We are reaching people around the world. And the really cool thing is we just started up a second campus in Turkey.
Oh, wow.
Where we have 12 students started a couple of weeks ago. So with those 12 students and then the approximately 18 students that have just started in London, we are the largest test pilot school in the world.
And how long is the course to go through, like, the full test pilot course?
If you want to go through a course, which would be an experimental test pilot course, we are an EASA-approved training organization. That course is approximately a year, and you would come out with a CAT 1. One of the interesting things in the past few years that we've been doing is implementing where students can actually work on a Master of Science degree also. So we are internationally recognized as a designated learning institution that can offer a Master of Science in flight test engineering and in flight testing.
And how long does it take to get the Master of Science if you come in with like a normal Bachelor of Science of some sort?
Yeah, there's a lot of qualifications really that you need when you're coming into like a Master of Flight Test Engineering.
Right.
You don't have to be a flight test engineer to apply and take that master's program, but you do need to be an aerospace engineer. You need to have marks of a certain standard. You need to be able to pass certain medical tests, that sort of thing. The flight test engineers, they do not fly the aircraft. That's what the test pilot students do. But the flight test engineering stations there, they allow the data that's collected at various points all over the aircraft to stream into those iPads, and then they can interpret the data, manipulate the data, they can write test reports, which would then go back to a test pilot. And then working in tandem, test pilot and flight test engineer, then they would redo the process. So lots of students don't necessarily train every single, you know, day on this aircraft, but the students that pick it as their final project, their capstone project, this is probably the best aircraft. If you take a student in Turkey, they may not have an opportunity to fly something like this and then land on water. It
sure.
has great flying qualities, but it also is very interesting to land on water.
Right, and I suppose that's all part of the flight test school, is giving different experiences in different airplanes.
Absolutely.
And how is that beneficial to them in doing the flight test stuff when they get out of your school and into the real world?
Absolutely. Most of the students have flown multiple types while they're at the school. We also have a gigantic simulation center. We have 22 different simulators in there also.
Wow.
So it's kind of a ground school lecture approach, then a simulation approach, and then a flying approach. But the students that come through this one, they love it. And they also get to fly lots of types. Now they come in, they're either rotary wing or fixed wing. So we have, I believe, 6 rotary wing helicopters right now. And we've got, what Darren had said, then I believe we're getting 5 or 6 more aircraft before Christmas.
Oh wow, so you're like growing. That's
well,
fantastic.
We have the students. We have the students, we need to keep them flying, keep them on different types, so.
And also keep these beautiful older airplanes flying.
Absolutely. This one is now a mobile training lab. Students can come here, they can learn. It's more exciting maybe than sometimes sitting in a classroom.
Well, thank you for joining us. We have been talking to Darren Robb and Sheila Hodgson from the International Test Pilot School. You're listening to EAA Radio.